This is the Partnership Playbook, a podcast helping sales and marketing leaders secure high-value partnerships that finally unlock business growth and reclaim time. I'm your coach, Phil Hayes-Sinclair. Welcome to the show.
So, Laura Barnard, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. I've got to say that the work that you've been doing and the history you have in your career, to me personally, is quite fascinating. I think everyone who's about to listen to this conversation is also going to be quite enamored with you once we're done. So thank you for being here. Let's start with, who is Laura and what mission are you on?
Well, thank you for inviting me into the space, Phil. It's great to meet you and spend this time with you. My name is Laura Barnard. I'm the founder of a company called Breakthrough Brands. We are a leadership empowerment solution for organizations, mostly focused within the U.S., but with some great global client partners. We are, I say we, my wife is the CEO of the business. We've managed to stay together for over 20 years and work together and work out of the same home. So that is a miracle in and of itself. Indeed. And we are proud parents of three amazing daughters. We have a high school student, a middle school student, and an elementary school student. So we have, in addition to the business, a full plate of a lot of great things. And I'm excited to delve into the conversation with you.
That's amazing. So look, we've been tracking your work for a while. There is a book we're going to talk about shortly and throughout this conversation. I think there is a lot that has happened over the last 20 plus years in the way that leadership development has evolved. I think the world has realized that the need for people to be able to understand what leadership is and be developed to understand how to make decisions, how to inspire others to follow, and importantly, how to allow people to develop a language so they can communicate to get to a partnership point and actually move on is really, really important, probably more so now than ever before. So tell me a little bit about how your career got to a point of shaping you, for you and your wife to say, actually, this is what we should dedicate our professional lives to.
Yeah, great question. If I kind of go back to very early childhood, even, of kind of where is the thread of my, you know, personal and professional life and kind of where it nets out today. I think, you know, I grew up a very avid athlete, any kind of sport, two older brothers, sort of always, I was tagging along and always competing on whatever field of competition was available. And I had this, I'll say rather outlandish belief that it was a level playing field, that, you know, that concept of I could go out there, compete, not always win, but be out there with all kinds of people and have the chance to compete and win and succeed. And I carried that same spirit kind of with me into school and into the workforce. And pretty quickly as a professional, you know, realized that it's not quite a level playing field for everybody. Not everyone is treated the same. And the higher up that I got in positions of leadership, management first, and then in leadership, it was worse. You know, I didn't see a lot of females at that senior executive table. I did not see a lot of LGBTQ members at that leadership table. And the styles of leadership that I saw succeeding and rising up to the ranks of CEO did not look, sound, act, talk, behave like me. So as I look up the ladder, so to speak, not really seeing as many role models as I would have anticipated, kind of with that belief that, you know, we can all compete and win and succeed. Mm-hmm. So I think about, you know, kind of pulling this thread through of what can I do about this? You know, I'm trying to rise up and advance in my leadership, experiencing some barriers along the way, both internal psychological barriers, like, am I good enough? The imposter syndrome, these things that rear their ugly heads. And then also some sort of outside external forces, some barriers, you know, policies, procedures, ways of working with an organization. So, you know, the simple kind of construct was like, what can I do to help break through, you know, pun intended, some of these mm-hmm. barriers that I had experienced as a leader and my wife absolutely experienced as well. And a lot of women and underrepresented leaders, I think, out there could relate. And I do not have a magic wand, did not have a panacea cure-all solution, but we did develop an approach to looking at leadership development differently. I had the benefit of and privilege of a lot of amazing large organizations who invested in me as a junior executive, sort of rising up, executive coaching, assessments, resources, classes. I got my MBA at the University of Chicago, all these great things, right? And feeling, empowered by them in some regard, but then also limited by them, especially as I got more advanced, to say, just because I scored a certain way on a certain leadership assessment profile, Myers-Briggs or a DISC or a StrengthsFinder, I tended to find myself feeling like I was being boxed in and categorized, and that sometimes those results were used almost against me as I was advancing. And I saw how those tools were kind of backward looking in some regards, and past behavior of leadership and wanting kind of flashing forward to break that barrier as well, and say, what can we do to look at leadership development differently, help specifically underrepresented leaders break through some of those barriers that they're facing, and really unlock that impact to lead that is within everybody. That is my belief, that everyone has the capacity to lead, not just those who sort of fit the mold of past leadership. So that kind of spirit is what carried us forward to launch Breakthrough back in 2019. We've honed the offering, I'll say, to deliver this work at scale for organizations, really going from the one-to-one, trying to help you as a leader, right, to switching to this more one-to-many, kind of this cohort-based approach to really change the culture of leadership within organizations.
You know, it's funny because there are rarely times where organizations have the reflex to be able to teach and coach junior leaders at those pivotal moments for them to understand that there is a different way. I remember, I started my career in the military, and there is a very standard way of teaching, training, and preparing, depending on the job type that you've gone into. And you can almost be rest assured that the person who you've not met, who you end up being partnered with in the same kind of job, has gone through the same style of training, which is quite useful when you're quite young and you don't really understand what to do. There's not really an ability for you to learn on, not so much on the job, but sort of by yourself. And then when you move into some larger brands, those who have really got this internal learning muscle, they put you through these programs, as you said, and I benefited from those as well, where it was, I never knew these things, but I look 20 years on, 30 years on, backwards to those moments. And there was those pivotal moments where, had I not gone through that kind of training, things like, how do you run a meeting effectively? How do you create the ability to, discuss a certain difficult topic with people? They would be seen as soft skills in some realms, but we would look at that now and just go, that's essential leadership capability. When you look at the brands you've worked with prior to establishing Breakthrough, and I'll get to the partnership angle on this in a second, but were there a couple of those moments where you thought, aha, I can see this being a really, really pivotal time for me in my own personal learning journey when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, I think back this is my second chapter of my career with Breakthrough, kind of the first chapter being, the brand management pathway professionally. And I, was very much eager to join, the biggest, best organization with the best, best training and development and culture. So I was, pretty intentional with where I chose to work coming out of business school. And I was very fortunate. My first sort of real, solid foundation job was with the Mars Wrigley organization, which is a large, global food and snack, pet food company. So I was eager to, I look back, I was kind of like a kid in the candy store, like all these resources and all this training and more of it, more assessments, more development, all those things, sign me up for anything. Feeling very comforted, I'll say, by this notion of a path. Like, okay, you're going to go from assistant to associate to the senior brand manager to the director to the VP. Like, there's a nice, clear path to quote unquote leadership. And I look back and I hit the milestones as I was anticipated to hit. And when the next level up in my advancement to really become a people manager didn't come quite fast enough because I was also very impatient back then. I was looking for ways and very much, you know, as happy as I was at Mars Wrigley, and I will still sing their praises to this day, I was looking for opportunities where I could advance more quickly and start to actually manage and lead people at the level that I wanted to. So kind of looking this notion of this comfort in a set path, I think back to that, and, you know, I learned a lot in those environments, those more structured environments, but I'm this entrepreneurial spirit in me and this action bias that I have and really wanting to not be held back by bureaucracy or artificial timelines in terms of what was the job that needed to be done in terms of leadership. I learned from that structure, but I also learned where I wanted some more flexibility and some more possibilities and a faster pace. I think about, you know, starting a company, it's on you, right? There's no set path. There's no recipe. There's no, you know, formulaic approach to developing this part of my career. But I think about that as, that would have been very scary to me 20 years ago, but now that's something that I definitely, I thrive in that. And I kind of crave this notion of what is next and kind of moving things forward. And that's sort of the more in a leadership perspective, moving from, you know, I was a connector sort of leadership type using our framework and stepping into the space of more of a visionary leader to say, okay, what's possible, what's out there. And I would not have been comfortable thinking or acting or behaving like a visionary leader 20 years ago. I was more that connector, play the role within those cross-functional teams, and sort of breaking free of that has been part of my evolution as a leader.
I love that. And when we talk about breakthrough, so 2019 was when this business came to life, just before the pandemic. Then we ride through the pandemic. To some extent, we're probably still living the aftermath of that, and that's hopefully that will pass sometime soon. But I do wonder, you know, I see the work that you do and the focus that you have and the narrative that you bring to breakthrough and the kind of lens you want leaders and organizations to look through and just be aware of so they can respond in a way which is thoughtful and frankly to benefit from the massive upside that comes with a diverse and interesting and curious workforce. When you bring that into an organization, what kind of specific problems are they trying to get you to help them solve inside their businesses? Because it feels to me, and this will, you know, for people who are involved in equity, diversity, and inclusion, they will go, we've still got so much work to do. There'll be others that say, you know, we're doing a really great job. Like, considering where we've come from, we're doing a really good job. Now, I would always err on the side of there's still a lot of work to do, because there is, from my point of view, a massive amount of work to do. But what is the problems that you're helping your clients solve as you walk in the door?
Yeah, great question. I think about, you know, if each client is so different, but there's some themes I think we've learned some patterns, and even back to 2019 till now, things have shifted and changed, but those kind of durable themes and those consistent problems tend to be around what we talk about, like key people indicators. So these are things that these organizations want to move the needle on as it relates to their people. And we think about a few of these, you know, I'll throw out some terms like mobility, retention, advancement, visibility, culture of belonging, you know, a sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. So we will assess in those early meetings with the decision makers, you know, which we can't solve all of these things, but which of those places do we want to sort of give our time and energy, and what can Breakthrough sort of provide as a tool to help move the needle on that people indicator. So I think where, you know, organizations are, like we all are, there's a lot of volatility and uncertainty and chaos happening. So we try to get it some focus on, this is where we're trying to play with our programming and what we're trying to achieve. And I think about our approach really is about helping the leader, first of all, see themselves as a leader and believe that they can lead. So it's a very we do group workshops and sort of cohort-based approaches, but we take it down to the each individual and helping them understand what makes them unique, what their strengths, their attributes are, what is their story, and really it increases their confidence and clarity in themselves so that they can then do what they do best and lead more authentically, more effectively. And that, if we have a lot of leaders like that in the org feeling that way, feeling emboldened and empowered and clear and confident in their leadership brand, that rises and bubbles up to create those cultures of belonging where in, and we see that as a place that organizations can really invest in and help be a reason why they can thrive. So we, in a word, I think, yes, we are leadership development or a few words, right? But we are trying to ultimately help, I think, solve the problem of this culture of belonging for organizations.
Mm. And it's long overdue, I think it's fair to say. There's a, you mentioned before this idea of being clear and helping these leaders be clear in the way that they want to approach their work. There's something interesting in the parallel for business partnership, which is that the greatest accelerant to a new business partnership, and this can be internally between teams where silos exist, or it can also be external, right? Where you're looking at other organizations saying, how do we distribute more effectively? How do we secure our supply chain more effectively? Or how do we innovate together so that we can create something new? The greatest accelerant to that conversation is clarity of the ask. And it feels to me like the ability for somebody to develop a clear ask has to be grounded in the clarity they have of themselves. And so I'm just curious about this intersection, because the more I see organizations that I coach have people that say, actually, when I walk into a conversation, there is a level of confidence and content and knowledge that comes with this, but the ability for somebody to say, on a cold basis, beyond the pleasantries, we wanted to meet you, Company B, because we have this hunch about this opportunity and this is what we need, and we're hunting for a great partner to help us do this. And it's surprising to me when a really small proportion of people right now get that ask and that question, that confidence right in that moment. It removes the need for the other ordinarily four meetings that need to go on in order to get you to the same place, right? And I'm just curious, and this is a little bit off script, but I'm a bit curious about your reflections on that, because what we're seeing in the world right now is the need for a greater level of, we'll call it broadly, cooperation, which you could turn into partnership. And this is cross-border, but most importantly, this is inside large multinational organizations that are grappling with cultural differences that have traditionally made them quite strong from a balance sheet point of view. But as all of these little geopolitical, tussles keep on happening, there's just a need to try and thread needles to make that alliance and that web even stronger, so that not only business can be done, but societies can continue to flourish. So I'm just curious on your reflections on how you think that plays out.
Yeah, I wish I had a clear answer on that. I think if you take it back to the leader, sort of in any of those conversations or those situations, I think about, you have to be internally clear in order to be externally clear. So getting that sense of, purpose, mission, vision, values, like who am I, the philosophical question, getting very clear on that and comfortable with that. And ideally like the whole version of that for you, not the code switching or the veiled version or some alternate version that's going to be hard for you to keep up with. So if you can be internally clear first, then you can be externally clear for others. And how do you show up for others, right? Your words, your decisions, your actions, your asks, right? And so the work that we do is helping these leaders, it's very internal, self-reflective, it's deep, peel the onion like we talk about, but then it's flipping that switch to say, okay, great, don't just keep this within you, you have to share it out with others and put it out clearly and confidently. And from a branding perspective, you think about that leader as a brand, and take the analogy of a product or a company brand, it has to be clear, cohesive, you know, consistent, using distinctive assets that begin to become sticky in our minds, right, to remember that brand and create that perception. So same thing for people. If you're in those situations and, you know, trying to close a deal or work on a partnership or, you know, figure out, move business forward, that clarity coming out of that leader is going to help move things forward much more efficiently, effectively, you know, and establish, I think, when people are clear, consistent, cohesive with their external words, decisions, actions, people trust them more. And there's that, that trust factor is critical. So I think it comes down to the so what, who cares of all this, is that can we trust each other? And is my communication coming through in a way that's relevant to you and connecting with you?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I really do. There is something really intoxicating about dealing with people who are like that. And I think if there was one tip for junior leaders to be thinking about, or up-and-coming leaders to think about, is try to find the people, almost rust on to the people who you can perceive to be doing that well. Take all the good things you can take from that behavioral characteristic. And some of it can be quite ego-driven, and some of it, you know, can be, can come from the right place. But I think it's important for leaders to say, I saw that person introduce open and close relationships in a way which I've not seen that happen. Look for that and really cultivate that in your own mind, because it is a skill set that will persevere beyond anything that is sort of worrying society right now, things like AI and everything else. This is a deeply behavioral trait that I think becomes really critical for people to be successful. Laura, tell me about the spectrum of leadership empowerment model. Tell me about what this is and why this is so important and central to your work.
Yeah. So the spectrum of leadership empowerment, we'll call it the SLE just for less syllables. So the SLE for shorthand, was really designed to help people see themselves differently as leaders and help, you know, help us see others differently as leaders. So the spectrum is a way to put a light on different styles of leadership. And it's rooted in two basic things. My background, before my professional life began, I'd studied psychology at Harvard University, really focusing in on social psychology, motivational psychology, team dynamics, those types of things, and understanding. I honed into this topic of intrinsic motivation pretty deeply. And so I was always curious about what is, you know, we see these great leaders, what is motivating them? What is really driving them besides, you know, the fame and the money and the attention, right? There's something hopefully that they're striving towards that's driving their behaviors. And so the model sort of starts with that at its core. Can we understand what is intrinsically motivating to the leader? And then can we map it to an archetype or like a style of leadership? So I'd spent most of my 20 years in brand management and marketing, leveraging this tool of archetypes to help position product brands. So if I go back to my Mars Wrigley days, a brand like Skittles, which I think you have down in Australia,
for
but
sure.
People know, yep, and love. I'm sorry about the sugar and the dental work, I'm sure. But you know, the Mars, you know, and then many large organizations will leverage us, but they want their brands to sort of fit into these key archetypes that consumers can understand and relate and connect to. So this idea of, you know, kind of a hypothesis, I'll say, was that could we kind of map these intrinsic motivations to these archetypes that we kind of know about people? And could we pass all of this through the filter of being, you know, simple to kind of access, you know, accessible, innovative, and we'll talk about that a little bit, and inclusive. So instead of talking about sort of gendered or patriarchal terms like the hero and the outlaw, right, or the mother figure, which are typical archetypes, could we talk about some new ways and some new styles of leadership archetypes, or leadership types as we call them? So the SLE sort of starts with intrinsic motivation, understanding that in the leader, helping map that to this leadership type, and then sort of putting it into the world. The external expression of that internal clarity becomes the starting point for their brand. So the leadership type serves as a jumping off point or filter for that, the brand of the leader. And the brand is really, what is that promise that they make to others? What are they how are they positioning themselves? How are they communicating? What is that sort of external expression, and how are they, you know, internal to their company, but also externally, perhaps as thought leaders? So the SLE, again, is a powerful tool. It's a dynamic tool. It's not a set it and forget it, like some leadership assessments might of the past maybe. It's meant to really be a dynamic model that helps you wherever you're at in your leadership journey.
And it's interesting, you mentioned this idea of trust that lives there. You know, one of the major themes that we see come out in partnerships that have been enduring, some of history's most iconic ones, has come from people that worked together previously in other companies and other forums, where you would look at it and just go, how did this happen so quickly when this person came to a business or to an organization? And when you peel back the layers, it's because we went to school together, or there was a relationship we had before. And this idea of trust that has been built somewhere before but can be transplanted into a new environment is something which I'm not sure organizations fully understand the value that is part of that equation when they're looking to hire someone new. So, you know, people will often say they've got it looks like they've got a strong network. That strong network is likely to be what they bring with them in order to drive change. And it's interesting to me that there is not a weight placed on, or actually how to determine the strength of the weight of that relationship set that that person brings with them in order to either bring new talent into an organization or to forge, you know, new partnerships that could actually move the entire organization forward. So to that extent, and that empowerment model, I think is critical to that. How would you be coaching, or, you know, leaders to say, yes, your personal vision and mission, your expression of clarity about who you are as an individual and how that translates into an organization, how would you help them understand that next step into, well, let's take the power you've just found through the work that we've done together and actually create even more value externally, because now you've got that confidence to go and forge those partnerships, bring other perhaps atypical relationships into an organization. How do you think you would help people understand that and coach them through that and the clients you've got?
Yeah. So I think about, you know, I'll take kind of my own like personal case study of this. Like if when we are clear on who we are, why we do what we do, our brand as a leader, right? We then, as we discuss, we can put that message out to the world more clearly. So it starts with us being clear in who we are. And so what are we putting out there, right? So so if we're clear on who we are, we're clear on our brand, now taking that next step, we have to put it out to the world. We have to share it. We cannot, you know, the work that we do results in a lovely, you know, 30 slide report readout for that leader. And the worst thing that happens is if that report sits in their desk drawer or on their laptop and they don't use it and activate it. So talk about activation. And activation is, you know, as simple as sharing your story. So in our work, you know, we will help sort of rewrite the narrative of the leader, and more than their bio, more than their resume, you know, it's not a laundry list of accolades, accomplishments. Nobody cares about that. We want to know about, you know, who they are, what they're trying to achieve. How do they tell their story? So the storytelling, and your story lives on your LinkedIn, you know, about me section. Your story may live on your corporate website. Every time you introduce yourself, when you reach out to a new network connection, when you're trying to make that connection or make that deal, right? What is the story that you're telling and what are your messaging points? So that you have to put it out there. You cannot keep it hidden or invisible or quiet. So we encourage people to put it out there. You know, like a brand will billboard something. We need to put it out there to the world, show it in a way that's clear, consistent, cohesive, et cetera. So I think, you know, and we'll say if from my perspective, if I don't put out to the world, I'll say, you know, on LinkedIn, for example, that I, you know, I have an opportunity, I should say, to share that I, you know, I'm trying to empower underrepresented leaders. I am a leadership and branding expert. If I don't put that out there, how will people know how to connect and relate and collaborate with me?
You've
got to put it out there in order to get it back. So are you putting out good signals, clear signals? Are you putting out mixed signals? Are you putting out no signal. And so how are you going to facilitate not just conversation, but collaboration, partnership, innovation, right? If you don't put it out there. But we want to make sure people are putting out really strong messaging.
When you think about the most interesting partnership you've seen in your career to date, the one that says in your mind, this is the exemplar, I've got to find a way to try and replicate that, what comes to mind for you?
Oh, good question. I think I'm a sports fanatic, so it's hard for me. Most of my beloved examples of brands and partnerships are going to tend to be in that space. But I just think about, that brand like Nike, for example, and the Jordan brand specifically, this integration with the game of basketball, and to see, growing up in Chicago, lifelong fan of the Bulls and Michael, Michael Jordan, it's hard for me to escape that, but to see the way that Nike and the Jordan brand have partnered with the collegiate sports scene and the professional sports scene and the basketball space, going beyond just, Michael wearing those shoes, right, is transcendent. Mm-hmm. And this idea of brands that can credibly play in a lot of different spaces and hit a pretty massive audience. You see, a 3-year-old little girl wearing Nike Jordans, and you see, an 85-year-old man wearing Jordan. So this idea of the brand's power to transcend and sort of not just fit one specific demographic, but be relevant to a lot of people. And how does, Nike, its partnership, I'll say, with basketball, broadly speaking, has really given it this enormous global platform, which is so powerful. But I think you have a great product, you have a really strong brand, and you find those places and spaces where the sport can kind of take it and expand it, beyond just selling a sneaker, right? They've really built an incredible global iconic brand in partnership with the sport of basketball.
And it's interesting, I suppose, that it's persevered through cultures and through time. I don't think that there is somebody who would intersect with that game and not at some point, we're still talking about such incredible players that are still playing now, but there is also, we will tell our grandchildren stories of Jordan, even if you didn't play the sport. You just can't not want to talk about that. In a similar way, and I love being an anthropologist on these kind of partnerships and going back and sort of wondering, and whilst there have been documentaries and things on it, you sort of wonder, what was that early conversation that led to somebody saying, listen, we need to get into basketball, right? We need to find a way, particularly when you look back at, Phil Knight's journey at Nike, where it was, look, these are track shoes, right? We're trying to find a way to make these things. I'm in Japan every 2.5 minutes. It's post-war reconstruction. How do I sort of build this out? Then somebody says, it's basketball. We've got to get to basketball. Given your athletic background, and this is going again a bit off script, can you imagine what that conversation must have been like to sort of at a brand level to say, we need to sort of engage with a sport like this? What do you think that would have been like back in that time? And then with your lens of Breakthrough Brands on right now, how do you imagine you would have had that conversation differently, knowing that in 30, 40, 50 years' time, you would have set the scene for a complete revolution in sport and culture and icon development?
Yeah. I mean, to be in that room would be pretty fascinating. I think, going back, when you see these great partnerships or these great ideas, there's people behind these big, huge, corporate moves and decisions and investments. And I think about those individuals, and the word that comes to mind is that they had to be very bold. So they have this bold idea, this bold vision, and I'm sure they had all their facts and figures and the analytics all lined up, but I'm imagining the story that they would tell, and like that power of storytelling and vision casting and getting people to really feel what this could be, what would be the potential. So I think that's part of any anything in branding I think about is really rooted in making an emotional connection. So, you know, think about this, that brand example, that partnership, someone had to be bold and had to tell the story, cast this vision in a way that got people to feel something. And then they could make decisions and then, you know, the test and learn. I think they were willing to sort of experiment a little bit, which is I'm a definite proponent of. And I think about with breakthrough, you know, my wife's not Phil Knight. I'm not Phil Knight, but we are trying to be bold. I think about who we are aligning with, partnering with from an organizational perspective, not just to grow our revenue, but to really advance the mission, which is making these workplaces more equitable. And if we can't tell the story of why we do what we do and hear their story of what they're trying to do and why they're trying to do it, and there is an emotional connection that has to happen there for those deals to close, I'll say, those partnerships to be forged, and think about trying to always keep thinking ahead and thinking big about what the future could hold, because there's a lot of uncertainty.
I totally get it. So when you think about the cautionary tale of partnerships, what's one in the back of your mind that sort of your spider senses tingle when you sort of see moves being made? It's like, oh, got to avoid that circumstance again.
Yeah. I think just from our business perspective too, we when something sounds kind of too good to be true, it might be too good to be true. So yeah. I look back to our early days and thinking, you know, we are women-owned business certified. We're LGBTQ-owned certified. We went through all the steps, the applications, the interviews, the due diligence to get those marks of certification, which we thought this is going to be the green light to all these amazing contracts that companies will want to fulfill with us because we are women-owned, LGBTQ-owned. Aligning with these large national organizations that basically serve to sort of matchmake between companies looking for services and vendors like ourselves providing those, and thinking that, okay, we're just going to join these national organizations that are supposed to help small businesses that look like ours connect with the big companies, and that it works for some. I don't want to completely knock it, but we spent a pretty significant amount of time, travel, money, effort on those sort of like, oh, this is just like, this is going to be easy, you know, to find business in this space. And it did not turn out that way. So we had to kind of do it the old fashioned way, kind of using our networks and connections, like you'd mentioned earlier, and working that natural referral network, versus some sort of more turnkey, quote unquote, turnkey solution to drive business.
It's funny, isn't it? I think most CEOs and business leaders have experienced something like that, particularly when starting out. And it's a very sage lesson to listen to. At the end of the day, momentum really counts. And the things that really matter is, can you help me solve a problem? That is forever going to be the issue. And certification is interesting, but it really comes down to how can we really solve a pain point for you right now. Let's touch on your book, what the manifesto is that you've got inside that, and importantly, we'll link to in the show notes where people can look at that and start to delve in. But the spirit of this publication feels to me like it is a manifesto for living the way that you would love to see organizations really adopt a lot of the philosophy that we've talked about today. The origins of that story, I'm sure, come from a very deep collaboration between you both. Tell me a little bit about what you would want people to feel as a consequence of picking up that book and then maybe walking in, imagining if they picked it up in December, we're recording this right now in December 2024, and they took it over the holidays and then came back out into the new year. What would you want them to be inspired to act on?
Great. Thinking about this, there's a statistic that caught my attention, and I think it's pretty alludes to a much more bigger, complex issue in the world. 70% of people do not see themselves as leaders. So from a kind of folks who are working in organizations, these are kind of corporate global studies done by fancy consulting firms like Deloitte, right? They do these large studies. So most people in organizations, in the workforce, do not see themselves as leaders. And so the book, if people at through reading the book and learning about the spectrum of leadership empowerment and these leadership types that we all can embody and step into, if people can have that belief that they can lead and the belief that they see themselves as leaders, what will that empower them to do? And that's kind of what we want, that feeling, okay, now you are a leader. Here's the type of leader you are. Now go take that into action. So kind of tapping into that premise that everyone has the capacity to lead is really the reason for the book, and not necessarily a manifesto or a story of my life, right? It's less about that. It's more like a manual for people, a guidebook to, okay, understand the model, think about their leadership differently, see themselves differently, and then very pragmatically find themselves on the spectrum, mm-hmm. and use that information to start to impact how they communicate, connect, relate to others, put their brand out there, as we talked about, in an effective, consistent, cohesive way. So kind of that jumping off point. So at the end, you know, having that belief and really wanting to take that leadership into action.
I think the combination of this, the framework we talked about earlier, and the way in which you've expressed that, and I saw that statistic as we were moving through it, and it was interesting but not surprising to me that there were people that identified as that. And I think it does go back to the point you made earlier around, you know, seeing people that you can really, I guess, sort of resonate with to go, that's the kind of leader I would like to be. Particularly when you're talking about people at the coalface who are doing work, who come in at entry-level roles, there are a very small percentage of people that, you know, see those stories of somebody who started on the factory floor at Ford and then moved all the way through into a major leadership role. You would hope that more of that happens. But I think for most people, there's not really that light on the hill, like literally and figuratively, of somebody that they can look at and say, I would like to be like that person, whether it's because of access, whether it's because there's not a visibility. There is certainly something about that. And, you know, I would posit that if we can do that more as leaders, it does create that level of belonging and ambition, as long as the systems and processes are there to help those people move through the ranks and give them that diverse level of experience to make them even more valuable to the organization, but probably more importantly, to develop more confidence in themselves.
Exactly.
Let me, we're going to get to a rapid fire set of questions in a second, Laura, and I'm very okay. interested to hear what your responses are to these. Okay. I would, before we get to that, just like to ask you one last question. When we think about partnership in professional and even in personal circumstances, there seems to be almost now an interest, but people hold short because they're not quite sure what step to take next. And to think about, you know, we often hear, and we say this in our marketing material, that, you know, partnerships often fail until now. And we make it quite clear, because the number one objection that we hear from people as we move into, you know, pre-coaching engagements is, you know, but a lot of these partnerships fail, and we show them why that's the case. And all of a sudden there's a light bulb that goes off and says, actually, well, we can see why that is the case and you can help us with that. But my question to you is, what are leaders missing about the value of partnerships?
Well, I think the notion that you can't go it alone, like we are, no one person is, you know, going to really make something happen for an entire organization. Yes, we have CEOs, yes, we have presidents and those things, but the idea that growth can happen just by working harder and I'm going to do this myself, kind of that ego takes over. And sort of, I think about the openness to partnership is really about possibilities and just opening up the aperture to say, okay, we can't just put our heads down and go it alone. We need others. So it's a very like human thing. I think it's to want to connect in that way. And we can get more done collaboratively and together than any of us can do alone. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It's a pile of money sitting on the floor. You need people to activate and bring things to life. And so, you know, to me, I learned that very early on as a soccer and basketball player, team sport player, being a strong player, but never the best player out there, but getting the most out of others and with others. And it's more enjoyable. The experience is more enjoyable, and you definitely can achieve more together.
All right, let's get into these rapid fire questions. Okay. There are five of them. Let me see. Let's see what you've got to say on these ones. All right. Complete this sentence. Partnership is
possibility.
Question two, what content are you loving at the moment? And by the way, this doesn't need to be in your realm. It can be any content anywhere.
Okay. This is in my realm, but I do love it. I'm listening to an Audible book, which I like to listen to when I walk. It's called Inclusion Uncomplicated by Dr. Nika White. And it's like been very, I'll say comforting is not the right word, but she has a very calm, clear demeanor and delivery of a very complex topic and just simplifies things in such a powerful way, which is exactly what I need to hear right now. So,
interesting. Okay. We'll link that to the show notes as well. I'm a massive audiophile as well. I love listening to books, and I find myself doing two things. One, listening to them at 1.5 times the speed, which does make my brain wonder when I'm speaking with other people.
Yeah, I slowed it down.
Yeah, why is it?
I was doing that. I slowed it down. It's I'm trying to go slower. It's hard for me too. So.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I don't.
Has this been at 1.5 speed the whole time? I don't
know. I mean, maybe people might actually find it more enjoyable to listen to it that way.
Exactly.
I think it's very fun. And I don't mean to say to people, I've read your book when actually I've listened to it. It goes in the same way for me. So it's good. Okay. Question three. What's the worst piece of advice you've received and why?
The worst piece of advice is, just put your head down and do the work. That is kind of against my grain. I think I am a hard worker. I always have been, but sometimes picking our head up, looking ahead, having intention, having strategy, and in some cases, if you're in a dead end situation or there's a misfit from a cultural perspective where you are, just working harder and being stuck is not the best path. So opening up to possibilities and thinking more expansively.
I love that. All right. So question four, when you see potential for a new partnership, what is the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
As a connector, I am definitely looking to get to know the decision makers and formulate some sort of relationship or connection to them, kind of not going immediately into the details of how great a partnership can be, but just getting to know them and developing relationships in that way. So it kind of starts with the bond and relationship and getting to know what's on their mind, what is their vision, and then figuring out where we can help them solve some problems.
Isn't interesting? The majority of people say just that. It's a version of, I go and socialize with them, or I try and find a way to spend time with them to understand them. Like it's a very human thing to want to try and do, and I don't think we should ever ignore how important that is to pick up all the cues, all the signals, all the things about a person, so you can, in as short a time as possible, understand what kind of human they would be like to interact with. I think it's super important. Right, final question, and you can say more than one thing, and I'm sure you will. What's one thing you're deeply grateful for right now?
Oh, my family, for sure. My wife and kids, and we have a close extended family, in the area here in Chicago and on the East Coast for my wife. And family's not always perfect, right? It's not always easy. But I am very very grateful for them. And I think to have the opportunity to do the work that we do, and it's to be able to do it together with Lindsay has been, again, not perfect, not easy, but it's been an amazing experience. And those would be the two things.
It's amazing. So Laura, tell tell people where they can learn more about you. We're going to link to all of these as well, but tell people where we can point them to.
Yeah. Please check out the book at leadershiptypes.com. That's going to be the best way. You can kind of get a synopsis of what to expect there. There's access to an exploratory self-assessment quiz that people can take to sort of see where they chart on that spectrum. So it could be a good first kind of entry point. And my contact information is available there if you'd like to discuss more about the programming for your organization or for your team that we would leverage, kind of orienting ourselves around the book and the spectrum of leadership empowerment.
Amazing. Laura, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you again. And I'm looking forward to finding a way for us to do more together, because I think there is something quite interesting here. So thank you again.
Absolutely. I appreciate the conversation, Phil. Thank you so much.
Before you go, I have a quick question for you. Do you worry that you're wasting time, money, and credibility with the wrong partnerships? It's exhausting to pretend everything's fine while secretly worrying that you've made the wrong call. You see others thriving with the right connections, and you're stuck wondering if you're missing out on opportunities that could really elevate your business. Well, the good news is that ends today, because you can download my free partner calculator that instantly assesses if a partner is an ideal fit for your business. It'll give you the clarity and the confidence and the edge you've been looking for to secure high-value partnerships that not only finally unlock business growth, but also help you reclaim your time. The link is in the show notes. And I'm really glad you're here. I'm Coach Phil Hayes Sinclair. I'll see you in the next episode.